Beyond Governance, Making Sense of Doing Business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
A very good morning to you and a warm welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Governance at High FM 101.9. Thank you for choosing us on this glorious morning. It's certainly my greatest pleasure to be in your company as we continue to highlight critical issues of national importance on issues such as productivity, competitiveness, intellectual property, benchmarking, and of course, corporate governance as its application cuts across industries and sectors. Once again, welcome to Beyond Governance, and yours truly is Nimrod Mbene. As always, I'm delighted to bring you, beloved listener of this show, thought leaders and captains of industry, to shed light on socio-economic and political environment which informs your business world. If you miss any of our previous show, not to worry, simply download the podcast and listen to captivating conversation we had last week with Dr. Malawalani, who is the senior lecturer at UNISA School of Agriculture and Animal Health, as well as Sol Morobi, who is the chief executive at Brian Hill. The gist of our conversation was centered around sustainability of food security through the prism of climate smart agriculture or scenario, as it were. One of the issues that comes to mind when you talk of food insecurity, one is bound to reflect on the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, which have certainly exacerbated food insecurity. We've picked up from a number of sources, such as IMF, UN, wherein they issued a warning that should the war in Ukraine persist, the world food suppliers will definitely be in peril. One individual who put it quite succinctly is the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who correctly pointed out that the war is impacting in the world's most vulnerable people because of the disruption in the countries known as the breadbasket of the world, i.e. Ukraine, as it were. But we all know that with the global wheat prices and agricultural input costs skyrocketing due to, among others, the petrol prices, there's definitely an urgent intervention which is needed to cushion the blow for farmers, especially in South African contexts, and let alone in Africa, as it were. I'm sure economic advisors elsewhere are mulling over in terms of the strategic interventions which would make a difference in terms of aiding or cushioning the blow derived from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Anyway, moving on strictly, our focal point is not Russia or Russian invasion of Ukraine, but intellectual property as one of the key drivers for economic growth and recovery. In making sense of this economic driver, I'm joined by McLean Sibanda, who is a seasoned business executive, respected intellectual property, innovation and entrepreneurship aspect with a world of experience, innovation ecosystem. He has authored two books entitled Nuts and Bolts, Strengthening Africa's Innovation and Entrepreneurship Ecosystem, and The Footprints, Laying the Path, Intellectual Property for Innovation and Economic Development. This is certainly an individual that is worthy of our attention on this glorious morning, for he comes across as an individual who has seen it all. As it were, the thrust of our conversation is going to be around the extent to which the intellectual property regime can facilitate or stifle growth at the macro level, SME level, at a macro level, at government level. One of the issues, just before I bring the good doctor here, is that we build relationship in this show. We understand and value, you know, connecting people. And any relationship, at least in my view, is anchored on a rapport. On that note, Dr. Sibanda, the listeners and I would like to know, who is McLean Sibanda? Just before we get into the gist of our conversation.
Good morning, Nimrod, and good morning as well to your listeners. It's an honor to be on your show and keep on doing the great work. I'm McLean Sibanda. I was trained initially as an engineer and then became an attorney and then a patent attorney. I have spent the bulk of my life both between the private sector, initially with companies like De Beers and Adams & Adams. And then in the later part of my career, I served in government, firstly in science and technology with various agencies, was also seconded to drafting legislation. And then my last post in the public sector was as CEO of the Innovation Hub in Gauteng, and I write about that in Nuts and Bolts, And in the past 4 years, I have gone back to the private sector, and I lead the Biggin Group's infrastructure thrust into the rest of the continent, focusing on ensuring that we're able to provide the right infrastructure for economic and social development in the continent. So I think that, by way of background, that's who I am. I'd like to consider myself as somebody that is passionate about the continent and passionate about economic development and solving the challenges of the day.
Thank you very much for that interesting introduction. We're going to take a quick break before we get our teeth and nails on topical issues.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Thank you for joining us and for not going anywhere. We have just started our very interesting conversation with Dr. McLean Sibanda, who is a well-rounded individual. If you've just missed that initial introduction, he started off as an engineer, unbeaten attorney, entrepreneur and author, been exposed to both public and private sector organization on a wide range of issues. However, the gist of our conversation today is all about intellectual property, which he has been molded, if you like, based on his previous exposure as an attorney working or specializing in intellectual property. Once again, thank you very much for joining us. Without any waste of time, let's get to the gist of intellectual property. For an individual who may or may not understand intellectual property in a nutshell, what does it mean?
Nimrod, intellectual property is quite often misunderstood. And I'd like to say that intellectual property is the creations of the mind. And these creations happen every day. They are everywhere around us. So it includes things like patents, inventions, copyright, trade secrets, trademarks, and all these quite often sounds like jargon. But just to demystify this, so when you write a book or you write an, notes in a webinar or in any training session, those notes, in essence, they carry what is called copyright. Because it's your creativity, it's the way that you've interpreted them and reduced them to a material form. When you, if you're to sing in the shower and you record that singing, you have copyright in that particular recording. And then when you come up with a new idea that solves a particular problem, quite often it may be what is called an invention. Particularly if it is new and it is non-obvious and it has capability to be used in industry, agriculture, or trade. And therefore, an invention gets protected by way of a patent. And then a design, it's how an article looks. So if you look, for example, at the different containers for roll-on, they look different. And each one of them has got an aesthetic features that make it unique, and therefore that is protected by designs. And then trademarks is what we encounter every day. So if you're driving a VW or a Mercedes-Benz or Kia, there's copyright. I mean, there's trademarks in those particular names, because they are used to distinguish those particular brands and type of cars from all others that actually exist, elsewhere. And then trade secrets, the famous two ones, I see Coca-Cola formula, which has never been disclosed, and as well as a KFC, recipe. So I think to your listeners, it's important for people to understand that intellectual property takes many dimensions and includes these different forms that I have mentioned. And quite often we seem to get stuck, particularly around patents. And I've seen that quite recently with the scramble for vaccines, where we have really focused a lot, on patents as looking holistically in terms of intellectual property.
Thank you very much for that insight, which strongly believe it's definitely making a bit of clarity or clarifying or demystifying the multidimensional character of intellectual property. As I've already pointed out, it does speak to trade secrets, trademarks, so on and so forth. So that kind of anecdote is quite useful in unpacking this apparent, what is apparent to be very complex and complicated scenario, as it were. One of the issues that is bedeviling innovation in an African context, it is that of intellectual property. For we know whether in the manufacturing sector, in the pharmaceutical sector, in the engineering sector, most of the products and services have been patented to the extent that the new entries into the market find it difficult in making headway because the originator need to concede to adaptation or fabrication of a product that would be useful for a particular market, African market or continental market as it were.
So I think the interesting thing about patents and very much, you know, all the other forms of intellectual property is that they tend to be territorial. What do I mean by that? It means that, you know, governments are the ones that grant patents. In granting patents, there is a trade-off where the government says to an inventor, I'll give you a patent in return to you disclosing how this invention is carried out. And so when you see each and every single patent document, it discloses, first of all, what is the invention? And secondly, it discloses how that invention is to be carried out in such a manner and detail that a person that is skilled in the art would be able to read that patent document and should be able to reproduce it. Now, having said that, and also having said that it's governments that grant up, you know, patents, it's also governments that enforce patents, you find that there are patents that exist for inventions, let's say, in the UK or Japan, but they are not, those patents are not, do not have equivalents in South Africa. So it's only the governments of the UK or Japan that can enforce those particular, you know, patents. So people in South Africa are free, in essence, to read those patent documents and reproduce those inventions in South Africa without fear of infringement. So it's actually very important for people to understand this concept of territoriality, you know, otherwise, you know, we continue to say that patents are a problem.
Well, thank you very much for that, Dr. Sibanda. We want to quickly take a break and back in just a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
This is Beyond Governance at High FM 101.9. We are having a very interesting conversation with Dr. Sibanda, who is an expert in intellectual property. We are essentially unpacking the extent to which intellectual property, in its broader sense, is impacting or promoting economic development at the macro level as well as at the micro level. We're talking about small business as well as the national level. Before we took that small break, Dr. Sibanda made a very interesting observations about or the role of government in relation to granting and enforcement of patents. And this is something that most people, in my view, weren't necessarily aware of, and the extent to which some of the patents can be reproduced. However, he also introduced yet another dimension around territoriality, which means in some instances only governments of originator product, say in the UK or US, are the only ones that could enforce a particular patent. Could you just maybe thresh that a bit, Dr. Sibanda, for I'm sure the listener out there would want to know more.
Yes. So I think, you know, it's a very important concept. So if I'm an inventor of a particular, you know, invention and I'm based in South Africa, what I would do is I would file for a patent, what you call a provisional patent application in South Africa. And then I might follow an international route if I believe that my invention has got international appeal and there's commercial merit in incurring those particular costs. So let's say that I choose to then file in Kenya, in Ghana, and the United States, and Japan. In essence, if those countries grant me the patent, it means that in granting me the patent, they are prepared to help to enforce, you know, my rights in those particular countries. And what are those rights? And those rights are to prevent other people from making the invention, from selling the invention, from importing into those countries a product or the invention into those countries from what is called exercising and also manufacturing in those particular countries. So those five acts are very important. And also it's important to understand that it's those particular governments that have agreed to give me a patent that would enforce them. If you are sitting in Botswana, and you like my invention because you've seen it in your travels to South Africa and in your travels to Kenya, and you believe that it has got value in terms of solving, let's say, a particular problem in Botswana, you are free, in essence, to read the patent document and copy it. And you can manufacture, you can sell it, you can, import into Botswana the invention or the product made out of the invention. The government of Botswana does not have rights to enforce that particular patent because it has not granted a patent. Why? Because me as an inventor did not apply for a patent in Botswana. So that's really the principle of territoriality. Now, why is that important? It's important in essence, I think, when we look at Africa's underdevelopment and we look at SMEs who are trying to increase their competitiveness and efficiencies, because it means that SMEs can look around the world, find the inventions that are patented that could give them competitiveness in the local markets, and in essence copy, provided that as they grow, they don't export into those particular countries where there are valid patents. Because when they export, it would be an act of importation in those particular countries. Now, having said that, it's also important to understand that patents do not exist forever. Patents are valid for 20 years. And at the end of 20 years, people are free to use those patents, those inventions, even in those countries where patents were granted. But also during those 20 years, a patent can be challenged because someone may find that a patent should not have been granted because the invention was already known. And therefore, it can be challenged. And when it has been invalidated, it means that it falls into the public domain and anyone can be able to use it.
Thank you very much. This is so interesting. Dr. Subhendra, I'm certainly learning a lot from the territoriality of patents. But here's the elephant in the room, based on the kind of explanation that you're providing. For an example, China is notoriously known as the infringer or the instigator of intellectual property. We've seen it, especially in the manufacturing sector, they have pretty much reproduced so many products, UK products, including cars. If I'm not mistaken, there was a court judgment wherein the Japanese manufacturer was told to withdraw the product for it violated patents, right? The question for me and possibly listeners is, this kind of infringement on the side of the Chinese, is it because those patents would have expired or they would have been contested? What would have been, what is the silver lining of this?
Yeah, so I mean, that's actually a very interesting one. And in Footprints, I deal with, the issue of China. So what happens is that under the World Trade Organization, there's an agreement called the TRIPS Agreement, which is a trade-related, aspects of intellectual property. Now, that agreement provides for, in essence, common standards, in respect of protection of various forms of intellectual property. But also, it has transition periods and also what is called flexibilities and exemptions. China did not accede to the TRIPS agreement at the same time that South Africa did. South Africa acceded to the TRIPS agreement, I think, back in 1994, 1996. China acceded later. Now, what does that mean is that China, in essence, had weaker intellectual property laws compared to South Africa. And it was allowed within the TRIPS agreement. I think you and I and listeners would appreciate the size of China. And because of China was using those flexibilities, people were not patenting in China. Again, we go back to the principle of territoriality. And therefore, the Chinese companies would see an idea elsewhere. They realize that there's no patent in China. They would copy. But China is a huge market. And as you know, they get the product out, obviously some of that would leak into markets where there are actually patents. And that's where the act of importing into a country where there's valid patents becomes a violation of intellectual property rights. So that's the one thing could have happened in some of those instances. But in other instances, yes, the patents, as I've said, are only valid for. And then when we look at cars, the look of some of the cars is not patented, but is protected by way of registered designs. And registered designs have got a validity of 10 years and there is no renewal. So once the 10 years is up, anybody can be able to copy and reproduce that and so forth. And therefore, you may find that a particular design has been, in essence, copied, but it's been copied within the ambit in terms of, the legal framework.
Now it explains why so many cars look alike.
It is an interesting thing because, the whole thing about creativity is that creativity strives on other creativity. So, people see a problem, they would want to solve it, but you're not the first one to have recognized a problem. That's one thing. But secondly, there's other people that have tried to solve the problem, and therefore we tend to understand, and we need to actually understand what other people have done. And then we also need to always be, and this is, I think, an important thing for small, medium enterprises, is that you, despite the fact that there is a patent, despite the fact that there is a design, registered design, there's an opportunity to invent around. How can you, in essence, improve on that? And when you improve, you may have a patent for the improvement. You may have a registered design for the improvement, but in certain cases, that improvement infringes on a prior invention that is patented. In those cases, that's when we also start to talk about dependent licenses, where you may need to license the underlying invention or the underlying patent in order for you to commercialize your own invention. It's a pity that we don't have much time, but I mean, I could unpack this, further. It's a very important concept for people to understand that you should, in essence, rely on existing information in order to come up with better goods and better services.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think the next question is going to be intellectual property in a South African context, given the equity consideration, given the inequality. Where is the intellectual property regime in a South African context? Is there a sense that current configuration of intellectual property does consider the equity considerations by way of elevating historically marginalized SMEs? Is there a special dispensation, or it is a blanket approach, as you have alluded to in the past? Could you just clarify that point?
Yeah, so I mean, because we've acceded to TRIPS, in essence, also under TRIPS and also what is called the Paris Convention, there cannot be preferential treatment for South Africans. What the Paris Convention says, and this deals with protection of intellectual property, is that a country cannot afford its citizens are more preference than those of the member states of the Paris Convention. On that particular basis, yes, I think at first sight, it appears that the intellectual property regime does not take equity, considerations. There is currently some amendments that are being proposed to the Patents Act or intellectual property laws, which will then also take into account the fact that SMEs may rely more on what is called utility models, which is lower thresholds of invention than that is afforded by, by patents. Going back to the definition where I've said that intellectual property is the creations of the mind, it talks to, in essence, the education, the structure of our education in South Africa, which has disenfranchised, many of our people. And therefore, to fix that, we need to look at education, we need to look at awareness, increasing awareness of the issues of intellectual property. We need to look at how we equip small, medium enterprises, not only for them to invent and come up with new creations and come up with new inventions, but also for them to identify inventions and intellectual property that exist elsewhere that they can be able to bring into their companies by way of, you know, technology transfer or simply adaptation or copying, you know, for that to give them competitiveness. And that's when we talk about technology transfer. We know if you look at a country like Korea, Korea was in the 60s was poorer than Mozambique, but they embarked on a process where the government, in essence, equipped the SMEs and also supported them importing technologies and licensing in patents and inventions from elsewhere. With a view of developing their sector, and also plays a lot of emphasis over a period of time on education. So one of the things that I talk about in footprints is the fact that I believe that intellectual property should be taught not at universities, but should be taught at primary schools, it should be taught at high schools, it should be taught at universities. It should not be seen as a preserve of lawyers. Intellectual property is everywhere. It's important for everyone. And we need to understand the different aspects and the different dimensions of intellectual property. And we need to understand how we can be able to harness it. So if someone is running a small, medium enterprise, I mean, let's take, for example, Drip. You know, Drip is a South African sneaker. They have built a trademark. Drip is a trademark that is well known now. If you talk about Drip and you see the logo, you can identify it with the founder, you can identify it with a particular sneaker, and it's very distinct, you know, from Nike. And therefore, you can go on and look at also like Batu. It's very distinct. Those are South African brands, and therefore, we need to start to celebrate the different aspects. It does not have to be just about patents. It can be about other forms of intellectual property. We're very rich in terms of artistic creations, music, and so forth. And we need to celebrate that. And we need to talk about the intellectual property in those issues.
Thank you very much for that insight. I mean, this is incredibly useful and insightful in so many ways. One of the biggest issues, the issue that I'm picking up from you is that we as South Africans need to leverage on other forms of intellectual property. I think you hit it on the nail by, you know, advocating for the role of education in so far as imparting insights around the intellectual property. This should not be a forte of attorneys, but it has to be integral part of school culture across the board, and you know, to ensure that everybody who walks into that particular environment is pretty much knowledgeable about what are the low-hanging fruits from the intellectual property regime. At some point, you spoke about utility model, which is a lower end. I think the lower end entry point of any player for the concession, if you like. So these are interesting insights, which certainly make a huge difference in as far as highlighting the significance of intellectual property, both from a small man, but also, you know, getting to the bigger boys and girls, so to speak. Coming back to the education sector, what has been or what is there an appetite in taking that particular route of entrenching in intellectual property as part of curricula, so to speak, that is taught at primary, secondary, university, and so on and so forth? What is the observation? Are we gravitating towards inclusion of intellectual property across the schooling system or not?
Sadly, so not at the level of schools, but you know, certainly at universities, we've seen that. So, I mean, I teach a master's program at Africa University, and this, in essence, brings on board you know, students from that are drawn from different countries across the continent, and most of them, some come from a social sciences background, and the others come, in essence, from a technical background. And so I believe that what we need to emphasize more is really teaching at schools around issues of innovation, teaching our young people to identify problems and also to look at solutions to those particular problems, because by actually doing so, we can then start to talk about the issues of patenting and intellectual property. It's still a long road. And I think the challenge is that quite often we expect results very quickly. So we need to take a long-term view.
We're going to take a quick break before we get our teeth and nails on topical issues.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.
Welcome back to Beyond Governance at High FM 101.9. We are having very interesting conversation with a thought leader, in my view, in as far as the intellectual property is concerned. The gist of our conversation with Dr. McLean Sibanda revolves around the role of intellectual property in stimulating economic growth. He has given us deep insights on how intellectual property, if it could be applied properly, can advance a small man, but also can be part and parcel of economic trajectory, as it were. Before we took that break, he was giving us insight on some of, you know, the levels which intellectual property could be activated. One of them being the education. Education plays a major role in fostering, if you like, that innovative, or with the exposure to intellectual property, particularly among, you know, entrepreneurs. We all know entrepreneurs' job is to innovate and harness and take advantages of what already exists. The important thing is that what we've learned is that intellectual property does acknowledge existing, trademarks, existing platforms which can be harnessed and improved upon, which is quite useful. And what I did like, you know, before we went to the break, that South Africans needs to harness more and more other variables of intellectual property. The art and culture, or the creative sector, is probably one of the most critical aspect of intellectual property, which, in my view, has not really been harnessed. When you look at the Americans, the biggest, exporter in this particular is movies. There's so much that South Africans can actually do because we are so unique in so many ways, and we've seen international coming to South Africa, leveraging or borrowing artistic outlook and commercializing that particular artistic outlook to our detriment in some instances. But I think the point is that we can literally take advantage of that kind of creativity. But the biggest question is how and what is lacking, Dr. Sibanda, from South African context in leveraging on in all these aspects that you've alluded to a point where we are able to commercialize various aspects of economy.
So, I mean, what is lacking? So the one thing is awareness lacking. And also, I mean, it's really, calling something by its name. So, for example, I see, I hear people talking about, I want to patent, my brand. You can't patent a brand. You can, trademark a brand. Education and awareness, it needs to be, focused on, and government needs to put in more resources around educating all its citizens about issues of intellectual property. The second one is that it is costly to file a patent, particularly if you're going to go into many countries, because the different countries charge different fees. You also have to use lawyers in those particular countries. So it's important for people to understand that to patent or not to patent, it's a commercial decision. You do not need a patent to commercialize your invention. And therefore, what we need also is perhaps some support from government in terms of supporting particularly the small, medium enterprises to be able to protect their inventions. But also that particular support needs to go one step further in terms of assisting small, medium enterprises to understand the potential of patents and intellectual property and assist them to identify technologies that can make them much more you know, competitive and assist them in essence in terms of the issues around technology transfer. And then also we need to be able to celebrate, you know, and tell the stories. So I mean, I refer to Batu, I refer to Drip. These are South African brands. We need to talk about them. Fabiani, many people do not know, it's not really Italian. It's a South African brand. And also when we have issues around rooibos, for example, that's a South African brand. Some people try to misappropriate that. We need to elevate those stories because people try to copy it. South Africa did this. South Africa's government supported this. And therefore, there is now protection for the name rooibos as what is called a geographical indication. We need to look at the Lion King. There was also infringement of copyright in that particular manner. And also copyright is very important for artists because the duration of protection of copyright is the lifetime of the author and 50 years after they've passed on. So it's probably the longest form duration of protection, you know, other than trade secrets. But trade secrets, well, once it leaks, it's leaked. But copyright is actually quite important. And therefore, when we teach, artists, musical students, dramatic, students, we need to make sure that we teach them about issues of intellectual property.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sbuane. I think this has been an awesome, awesome insight that you have gracefully agreed to share with the listeners on this show. I could not agree with you more, and I've certainly benefited extensively. You have broadened my understanding of the intellectual property regime and the extent to which can actually be harnessed in as far as developing is concerned. Unfortunately, we're going to leave it here, my good doctor. Thank you very much for coming through. It has been absolutely wonderful. We hope to have you in the nearest future, for I believe there are a lot of issues you and I have not unpacked.
No, thank you very much for having me as your guest. It's been really an honor and a privilege.
There you are. Thank you very much. There you are. That was McLean Sibanda, Dr. McLean Sibanda, who gracefully agreed to share with us. He's an expert in intellectual property, giving us ins and outs on how to navigate the very precarious, if not turbulent, waters of intellectual property. Unfortunately, we're going to leave it there. It's been absolutely wonderful to have him around. We, as I promised, will do a follow-up with him once again to get a deeper understanding on some of the specific issues that you might experience or you might experience or encounter in your journey. I hope this show has illuminated some of the issues that you don't have necessarily have to go through. But be that as it may, let's park it here until we do it again next time.
Beyond Governance was brought to you by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
We've weathered the unexpected. We've stepped into a new world. And now it is a time for our businesses to re-emerge. Sure-footed, clear-headed, and strategically on point. It is a time for greater certainty, for accurate, actionable market research and business intelligence to make effective, up-to-date decisions. South Africa, that is how we move our businesses and economy forward. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.